So I don't know about you. I'm ready to turn the page on these guys. So go ahead. Say it with me. We're not going back.
I guess they think they're not going back. Is that what I'm to understand?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
We'll see.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
It ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI, and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, and Rochester, New York's WRFZ. Down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF. They must be partying up in Minnesota right around now. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. We've got a lot to get to, oh, as usual today. Hi, Desi Doyen.
Hi.
Including late word from the corrupted pact and, yes, activist right-wing U.S. Supreme Court majority on an emergency ruling sought by Republicans hoping to purge more than 40,000 lawfully registered voters in Arizona, the battleground state of Arizona, in advance of the 2024 election. And as time allows, a few highlights from the rip-roaring, raucous, star-studded night three of the Democratic National Convention that you heard a little bit of at the top of the show there in Chicago. And I mean really star-studded, not Hulk Hogan, where Minnesota Governor Tim Walz brought down a packed house with his barn burner of a formal acceptance speech to officially become the Democrats' 2024 vice presidential nominee. And also, our last Green News report in advance of our break next week before the Labor Day holiday and the final sprint to Election Day on November 5. Desi Doyen, are you ready? Ready for that sprint?
It is what it is. Yes, of course.
I'm exhausted just thinking about it now, but I'm exhausted after all week watching the DNC until all hours of the morning. But let's begin here, as stupid as this may sound at first. We noted briefly, I think yesterday, the DNC night one television ratings on Monday beat the Republicans' National Convention first night ratings by 21%. And then came day two, where Democrats outpaced the GOP's day two broadcast by a stunning 55% across seven television networks. Variety reports that, according to Nielsen's primetime tracking, across 12 news channels, day one of the DNC brought in an average of 20 million viewers, and day two soared higher to an average 20.8 million. During Barack Obama's speech, that number surged even higher to about 21.6 million. Now, for context, Variety points out that the first three nights of July's Republican National Convention peaked at 18.1 million. And that was on day three, after premiering to 18 million on day one and cratering to 14.8 million on day two. As to the Democrats on day three, well, we now know, according to analyst Michael Mulvihill, the overnight ratings show that the DNC had a reported 29% increase in viewership over the RNC's third night. Now, I'm just mentioning these things, well, actually, for two reasons. One, since it's likely to drive Donald Trump, who is obsessed with crowd sizes and ratings, likely to drive him crazy, though that is not a very far drive at this point at all these days. But also because, as we saw in 2020, Donald Trump is going to lie about his crowd sizes, his ratings, and his poll numbers. And it's not just in order to stoke his ego. It is in order to make the case that if he loses, well, it's impossible that he lost, given what he will be describing as his much bigger crowd sizes and larger television ratings and his much better poll numbers. And so Democrats must have cheated. That will be his evidence that the election was rigged when he makes that case. If he makes that case, if he loses again. So as boring and stupid and often misleading as reporting on these things like crowd sizes and TV ratings and poll numbers are, we will likely need to keep reminding you of what they actually are. So when and if he loses and starts making those claims, you will know that he is lying. At least as long as the Harris-Walz campaign seems to be outpacing Trump in all of those metrics, as they are for the moment. And I should add also that her campaign is far outpacing Trump in fundraising as well, even though I find that metric kind of really gross. But the Harris-Walz team raised an unprecedented $500 million, half a billion dollars, in donations in the month since President Joe Biden stepped aside and endorsed his vice president for the top of the 2024 ticket. Most of that money, most of that $500 million is in small dollar donations, contrasted with Trump, who raised less than $50 million in that same month of in July. $500 million versus $50 million. So we'll see how night four goes regarding ratings, the final night, and whether Kamala Harris's official acceptance speech will top Donald Trump's lies on his night four of his own convention about the scratch that he received on his ear during a thankfully failed assassination attempt against him just days before the Republican National Convention. But relatedly, and more importantly, for the moment, in any event, Joan McCarter of Daily Kos reports all of that energy going on right now at the DNC is translating into actual work on the ground. The Harris-Walz campaign just announced that this is their team's largest mobilization week. This past weekend of action, as they called it, included over 10,000 volunteers across battleground states, 10,000. Those volunteers made around 900,000 calls and knocked on more than 100,000 doors in August. That's about 1 million voter contacts in a matter of days. They also recruited more than 24,000 new volunteers during their weekend blitz. And she notes this week, 4,000 people are phone banking on Wednesday night. And on Thursday night, the campaign is holding 500 convention watch parties, at least one in every state. McCarter writes, Trump's campaign has apparently decided to pull all of its volunteers' energy into so-called election integrity efforts on Election Day instead. They are not doing what the Harris-Walz campaign is doing, reaching people, knocking on doors, making calls. They're going to wait for election integrity efforts on Election Day. Never mind get out the vote efforts. They don't need to do that. The Trump campaign seems to have something else in mind, and they are saying as much. David Kurtz of Talking Points Memo appears to echo the observation from Joan McCarter, citing these remarks on Wednesday from Donald Trump at a rally in North Carolina.
And our primary focus is not to get out the vote. It's to make sure they don't cheat. because we have all the votes you need. You can see it. Every house along the way has signs. Trump, 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 Trump Vance, Trump Vance. And by the way, Vance is doing a great job.
So we have all the votes we need. We don't need any more votes. We don't need to knock on any more doors. Everything's fine. We got all the votes. We're going to win by landslide because yard signs on the way to his rally in North Carolina tell him everything that he needs to know about that, apparently. No need to get out the vote. Just make sure those dirty Democrats don't steal it from him again like they did the last time. So this is all about creating a false record that he is winning, that he cannot be beat, and that if he is declared the loser, well, it is only because it was stolen from him again. That's what all of this is about, setting all of that up. As Kurtz writes at TPM this morning, echoing what we have been trying to warn you about now for a couple of months, so it's good to hear it also from someone else. On the same day that the Democratic convention was highlighting Trump's January 6, 2021 transgressions, Trump himself was still fomenting election denialism at a rally in North Carolina, telling the crowd, quote, "Our primary focus is not to get out the vote, but to make sure they don't cheat." Stop and consider that particular comment for a moment, writes Kurtz. It's a more extreme version of his go-to falsehood that the only way he can lose is if Democrats cheat. In this version, the votes are all there for him. No need to even count them, because no matter the outcome, Democrats will have cheated him out of the votes that he knows to be there already for him. He also declares Democrats cheating to be guaranteed and without a doubt, so a 1-2 punch. I already have the votes, and Democrats were already cheating me out of them. Why does this matter, asks Kurtz before answering. At this point, I know that you know that his rampant election delegitimization is an authoritarian move, corrosive of democracy and self-serving to detriment of civic life. But what may not be widely understood yet is how Trump is not pinning his hopes this time on winning more ballots or prevailing in court or muscling his way into office via a mob. Trump's bid this time is dependent on MAGA-friendly elections officials and boards simply refusing to certify the results, and maybe in a few extreme instances, certifying them in his favor despite him losing the ballot count. The intent, writes Kurtz, is for delayed or rejected certifications to create enough chaos and uncertainty to deny Harris 270 electoral votes, which sends the matter to the House of Representatives to resolve. And this is a difficult concept to explain, though I keep trying to do so on the show, because you will need to know this. So pay attention closely, please. If Trump's scheming here goes as planned, you will need to understand this. As David writes, even if Democrats take the House majority in November, Trump could still prevail in a decision in the House, because the House vote for president, if nobody is certified as receiving 270 electoral votes, is decided by a vote of each state's House delegation. And that depends on which party holds a majority of House members in each state, with each state then getting one vote in this matter. And the GOP's advantage in small rural states means that they could still have the upper hand, even if they lack a majority of members overall. They may be in the minority in the House, but they control a majority of state delegations.
There's one vote per state. By that measure, the GOP has the majority.
Kurtz writes, it's such a far-fetched scheme that I feel some hesitation in warning about it. It feels like tinfoil hat territory, he says. But Trump's rhetoric lines up with it and makes a lot more sense in this context. What presidential candidate says publicly that they're not worried about getting out the vote? And he's right. When was the last time, if ever, you heard a presidential candidate say, yeah, we're not worried about getting out the vote? You can stay home. We got this all taken care of. We got plenty of votes. No, so is this the plan? Is this the hope? Of course, we do not know, but everything that he is doing, all of his rhetoric and a lot of reporting on the ground and a lot of comments from his own right-wing allies and even his campaign chairman, Chris LaCivita, just last month during the Republican convention in an interview with Politico, suggests the same. Remember this?
It's not over until he puts his hand on the Bible and takes the oath. It's not over till then. It's not over on Election Day. It's over on Inauguration Day. Because I wouldn't put anything past anybody.
What do you mean?
I just don't.
And remember the comments a few months earlier, I believe, from Kevin Roberts, the president of Heritage Foundation, the architects of the Project 2025 playbook. Remember what he had to say?
We are winning. There are a lot of victories that have been secured. Some of them are partial. Some of them in ways that the other side doesn't yet know are foundations for what's coming. And that's just the beginning. And we're not going to tell you everything that's coming.
So this sure sounds like where they're going, or this sure sounds like what they're planning on if they need to, if in fact the Harris-Walz ticket defeats the Trump-Vance ticket. It sure sounds like their plan. So it's good that you know about it this time. Tinfoil hat territory, as David Kurtz suggests. Well, maybe. But I sort of heard, you know, the same comments from some people when we were on this show warning and explaining the Republican plan on this program between Election Day 2020 and January 6, 2021. When we were explaining what Republicans were planning to do. Well, most of the media was sort of blithely ignoring it all. They were speculating about who was going to be, you know, who Joe Biden was going to name for his various cabinet positions and so forth. And we were saying, no, this is not over. Please pay attention. So forewarned is forearmed, as they say. We will continue to forewarn as appropriate over the next several months on this issue, because I think it's as important to keep your eyes on and to understand before Election Day as everything else. But before we even get to that part of the plan, as we have also been reporting on the broadcast, Republicans are very hard at work, as usual, trying to keep as many people, well, as many of certain people as they can, from voting at all, rather than, you know, presenting popular policies that Americans may actually support, which is the Democratic Party's apparently crazy strategy for winning the election. Desi calls all of this their suppress the vote, contest the vote plan.
Yes, suppress the vote, contest the vote, and then throw it to the House.
On that suppress portion of the plan, just before airtime on Thursday, the Supreme Court rejected, or at least mostly rejected, a Republican effort to purge nearly 42,000 lawfully registered Arizona voters from the rolls in advance of the 2024 presidential election in the battleground state that Democratic President Joe Biden won by just over 10,000 votes 4 years ago. So they rejected that GOP scheme to purge more than 40,000 voters in Arizona. So that's good news. But I say that they mostly rejected the plan because there are a few sort of caveats, somewhat confusing. In a 5-4 order, the corrupt 6-3 Republican majority on the high court allowed some enforcement of Republican regulations barring people from voting if they do not provide proof of citizenship when they register to vote. Now, I covered this matter and the decades-long effort, frankly, by Arizona Republicans to try over and over again to get away with this scheme over the past two decades. I covered that on a recent show, so I'm going to try to avoid going into too many details on this now that the court has come out with its ruling. For the moment, which effectively sends the case back down to the lower courts to continue to be heard. You can look up that show with all the details and get the full ugly skinny on this at the top of our August 20th broadcast just a couple of days ago. Download it for free at bradblog.com. That's thanks to those of you who are kind enough to donate to our efforts via bradblog.com/donate. Thank you. But since I can already see that the court's ruling here is going to cause some confusion just based on the two different headlines from the two different major news outlets that were first reporting on this ruling, I'm going to try to at least quickly clarify what it is that the court decided and what they did not. Reuters first reported, for example, in their headline, quote, U.S. Supreme Court partly revives Arizona's proof of citizenship voter law. AP's headline, on the other hand, describes the ruling as, quote, Supreme Court rejects GOP push to block 41,000 Arizona voters, but partly okays proof of citizenship law. So they're both accurate, even if one makes the ruling sound more disturbing and the other a little bit less so. So here's what we've actually got. I'll work from Reuters coverage here. The U.S. Supreme Court on Thursday revived part of an Arizona voter law requiring documented proof of U.S. citizenship to register to vote in response to a request, an emergency request, from the Republican National Committee and Arizona Republicans. The justices, in a 5-4 ruling, agreed to reinstate a provision of the law after a federal U.S. district judge in Arizona and a Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals panel blocked it in response to legal challenges by Democratic President Joe Biden's administration and by voting rights groups. Arizona's Republican-controlled legislature adopted these new restrictions on voter registration in 2022 when they still had a Republican governor in office to sign it. The law requires applicants who submit a federal voter registration form to provide evidence of U.S. citizenship in order to vote in presidential elections or to vote by mail in any federal election. Now, Arizona Republicans have been trying to do that for years now, going all the way back to 2004. But no less than the U.S. Supreme Court in a 7-2 decision back in 2013, written by no less than arch right winger Justice Antonin Scalia, found that the 2004 effort to force proof of citizenship on everyone registering to vote violated the 1993 National Voter Registration Act, the NVRA. In response to states like Arizona with a history of voter suppression, the NVRA makes it easier to register to vote in those states. The law creates a national voter registration form that allows registrants in all 50 states to easily register to vote using that form. But back in 2004, Arizona decided that newly registered voters also had to provide documentary proof of citizenship. Even if they, actually all of them, whether they use the national form or the Arizona's own state registration form, they all had to provide documentary proof of U.S. citizenship when they did.
And that's because Republicans knew that a lot of people don't have access to those documents to prove their citizenship for many different reasons, not of their fault.
In fact, 13 million Americans do not have, many of them, by the way, Native Americans, and there are a lot of Native Americans in Arizona, but more than 13 million Americans do not have the proof that they are citizens that would be needed in the state of Arizona to register to vote. So if you sign up on the state form, it says, you must include documentary proof of U.S. citizenship. But the national form that is used in all 50 states doesn't say anything about that. So this law was challenged, and the Supreme Court decided no, Arizona could not block people from registering via the federal form because they didn't supply documentary proof of citizenship because the national form doesn't say anything about that. In response, Arizona Republicans said, okay, fine, then people who use that federal form to register, they can only vote in federal elections, such as for president, but not in state and local elections, creating a two-tiered voter registration system in Arizona. Now, in 2018, Arizona eventually agreed to a consent decree with the Justice Department, who had sued them, allowing those so-called federal-only voters to be able to vote in all races. And then, in 2022, Arizona Republicans again tried the same damn thing. They changed the law again, this time hoping to bar all of these federal-only voters from being able to vote in either presidential races or by mail at all. And the lower courts blocked that 2022 law, at least for now, and the Republicans brought an appeal to that to the U.S. Supreme Court, which is even more right-wing than it was the last time they rejected this scheme back in, what was it, 2013? They brought it to the high court on an emergency basis and said, we need a decision by this Thursday because this Thursday is the deadline for finalizing the printing of ballots for the 2024 election. And if they're going to have their two-tier system, they need to know about it because they need to print separate ballots for all of this. The GOP apparently figured they had a friendlier, you know, meaning a more corrupt and willing to suppress the vote court, and they were mostly right. The upshot of Thursday's ruling then is that those who use the federal form to register, and there are nearly 42,000 Arizonans registered via that form, well, good news, they may continue to vote as they have, as the case is sent back down for consideration by the lower courts. But those 42,000 will, in fact, be able to vote for president in Arizona this year. But those who register on the Arizona form, well, they must, in fact, provide proof of citizenship, even though Republicans were unable to show even one example of a non-citizen registering or voting in an election in the state. Both Arizona's Attorney General and its Secretary of State, who are both now Democrats since 2022, they both opposed the Republicans' request to the justices to effectively purge some 40,000 voters from the roll just weeks before early voting starts in the most critical election, certainly of our time, in a state which decided its presidential race 4 years ago by just over 10,000 votes. So the ruling revives the restriction related to the state voter registration form, but it kept intact the ruling that blocks the provision that sought to tighten the limits on the federal form.
It's just so corrupt to do this so close to the election. And that's why Republicans in Arizona did it, because they know that a lot of folks that are going to be barred by this are not going to have the time to get together the documents that they will need to be allowed to vote, which they could have before.
But the upside here, at least, is that the 40,000 who are already registered under the national form will get to stay registered and will get to vote. And it was a strange breakdown of the justices here. Chief Justice John Roberts joined with fellow corrupt right-wing justices Brett Kavanaugh, Clarence Thomas, Sam Alito, and Gorsuch to grant the Republicans' request in part. Though, by the way, Thomas, Alito, and Gorsuch indicated they would have granted the entire request in full if it had been up to them, but apparently they couldn't get the votes. And interestingly, all of the ladies, yes, even the Republican one, that would be Republican Justice Amy Coney Barrett, joined with all three liberal justices, Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, and Ketanji Brown Jackson. They all would have denied the Republican request in full. Yeah, interesting. Amy Coney Barrett's been doing that a little bit more often these days. Anyway, there you go. Mostly good news today from the high court in that 42,000 voters will not be purged in Arizona,
yes,
even if new voters who register in Arizona using the state form will still have to provide documents under this right-wing papers, please voter registration law in the state. Got it? Hope so. Let's take a quick break here. We'll come back with some highlights from day three of the DNC in Chicago, where crazy Democrats, you know, they're trying to win the election by offering stuff that Americans like rather than keeping Americans from voting. As Coach Walls of Minnesota accepted the nomination to be Kamala Harris's vice presidential candidate, running mate, in a night of surprises, celebrations, and joy for the party. Some of those surprises and some of that joy is straight ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. All right, as mentioned, day three of the DNC in Chicago, where Democrats are hoping to win this year's elections the old-fashioned way by offering popular policies that, you know, win them the most votes. Well, it was a...
What a concept.
Yeah, I know. It was a star-studded affair. Granted, there was no Kid Rock or Hulk Hogan, but there was, well, Stevie Wonder, John Legend, someone named Oprah Winfrey in a surprise appearance, along with President Clinton. Bill Clinton, former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, current House Majority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, rising Democratic stars like Governor Wes Moore of Maryland, Josh Shapiro of Pennsylvania, Treasury Secretary Pete Buttigieg, among many others on the third day of the proceedings, officially themed A Fight for Our Freedoms. In the Democrats' attempt to reach voters of all stripes in that fight on the night that Minnesota Governor Tim Walz blew the roof off the joint, frankly, in his rousing acceptance speech to officially become Kamala Harris's vice presidential running mate, there were continuing efforts to appeal to independent voters and undecided voters, and yes, even Republican voters, which is something you did not see at all at the Republican convention, reaching out to Democrats. But there was quite a bit of that, trying to reach out to those independents and undecideds and Republicans at the Democrats, at the Democrats convention. For example, this appeal from Georgia's Republican former Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan, who left office just last year after serving as Lieutenant Governor during Donald Trump's efforts to steal the 2020 election in the state from Joe Biden, who narrowly won it that year.
Good evening. I bring greetings from the great state of Georgia. So let's get the hard part out of the way. I am a Republican. But tonight, I stand here as an American. An American that cares more about the future of this country than the future of Donald Trump. My journey started to this podium years ago when I realized Donald Trump was willing to lie, cheat, and steal to try to overturn the 2020 election. I realized Trump was a direct threat to democracy, and his actions disqualified him from ever, ever, ever stepping foot into the Oval Office again. I could spend my time revving up this crowd, but I'm certain I don't have to talk anybody out of voting for Donald Trump here. So I'm going to focus my attention on the millions of Republicans and independents that are at home that are sick and tired of making excuses for Donald Trump. If Republicans are being intellectually honest with ourselves, our party is not civil or conservative. It's chaotic and crazy, and the only thing left to do is dump Trump. These days, our party acts more like a cult worshiping a felonious thug. Look, you don't have to agree with every policy position of Kamala Harris. I don't. But you do have to recognize her prosecutor mindset that understands right from wrong, good from evil. She's a steady hand and will bring leadership to the White House that Donald Trump could never do. Let me be clear to my Republican friends at home watching. If you vote for Kamala Harris in 2024, you're not a Democrat, you're a patriot. In our family, my wife Brooke and I are raising three boys, and we have a family motto. And it says, doing the right thing will never be the wrong thing. During 2020, during the lowest of lows, when we had armed officers outside our house protecting us from other Republicans, Donald Trump had targeted us. My son came downstairs, and he handed me this coaster that I'd given him years before at a father-son retreat for our church. And he said, hey, Dad, doing the right thing will never be the wrong thing. Stay strong. To my fellow Republicans at home that want to pivot back towards policy, empathy, and tone, you know the right thing to do. Now let's have the courage to do it in November. Thank you, and God bless you.
That was Georgia's Republican former Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan, who just left office last year in 2023, courageously speaking on Wednesday at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. But throughout a star-studded night, as I said, it was, of course, the surprise appearance by superstar Oprah Winfrey in her old hometown of Chicago that frankly shook the rafters of the United Center, even as she, too, made an appeal to independent and undecided voters in her stemwinder remarks.
Let me tell you this. This election isn't about us and them. It's about you and me and what we want our futures to look like. There are choices to be made when we cast our ballot. Now, there's a certain candidate that says if we just go to the polls this one time, that we'll never have to do it again. Well, you know what? You're looking at a registered independent who's proud to vote again and again and again because I'm an American and that's what Americans do. Voting is the best of America. And I have always, since I was eligible to vote, I've always voted my values. And that is what is needed in this election now more than ever. So I'm calling on all you independents and all you undecideds. You know this is true. You know I'm telling you the truth, that values and character matter most of all. In leadership and in life. And more than anything, you know this is true, that decency and respect are on the ballot in 2024. And just plain common sense. Common sense tells you that Kamala Harris and Tim Walz can give us decency and respect. They're the ones that give it to us. So, we are Americans. We are Americans. Let us choose loyalty to the Constitution over loyalty to any individual. Because that's the best of America. And let us choose optimism over cynicism, because that's the best of America. And let us choose inclusion over retribution. Let us choose common sense over nonsense. Because that's the best of America. And let us choose the sweet promise of tomorrow over the bitter return to yesterday. We won't go back. We won't be set back, pushed back, bullied back, kicked back. We're not going back. Not going back. We're not going back. So, let us choose. Let us choose truth. Let us choose honor. And let us choose joy. Because that's the best of America. But more than anything else, let us choose freedom. Why? Because that's the best of America. We're all Americans, and together, let's all choose Kamala Harris! Thank you, Chicago! Thank you!
Well, if Oprah shook the rafters on Wednesday night at the United Center, the closing act of the night, Kamala Harris's vice presidential nominee, Minnesota's two-term governor, Tim Walz, and now, I think, officially both America's dad and America's coach, officially brought down the house on Thursday night in Chicago. But since, and MSNBC's Lawrence O'Donnell, I think, is right about this, it was political malpractice for the Democrats to not bring on Walz until 11:22 p.m. Eastern time, after many had gone to bed long after primetime, since many, therefore, likely missed the full, just remarkable, pitch-perfect speech from Walz. We'll play a slightly longer piece from his remarks as he wrapped up his acceptance speech to become the Democrats' 2024 nominee for vice president.
That's what this is all about. The responsibility we have to our kids, to each other, and to the future that we're building together, in which everyone is free to build the kind of life they want. But not everyone has that same sense of responsibility. Some folks just don't understand what it takes to be a good neighbor. Take Donald Trump and J.D. Vance. Their Project 2025 will make things much, much harder for people who are just trying to live their lives. They spent a lot of time pretending they know nothing about this. But look, I coached high school football long enough to know, and trust me on this, when somebody takes the time to draw up a playbook, they're going to use it. And we know if these guys get back in the White House, they'll start jacking up the costs on the middle class, they'll repeal the Affordable Care Act, they'll gut Social Security and Medicare, and they will ban abortion across this country, with or without Congress. Here's the thing. It's an agenda nobody asked for. It's an agenda that serves nobody except the richest and the most extreme amongst us. And it's an agenda that does nothing for our neighbors in need. Is it weird? Absolutely. Absolutely. But it's also wrong. And it's dangerous. It's not just me saying so. It's Trump's own people. They were with him for 4 years. They're warning us that the next 4 years will be much, much worse. You know, when I was teaching, every year, we'd elect a student body president. And you know what? Those teenagers could teach Donald Trump a hell of a lot about what a leader is. Leaders don't spend all day insulting people and blaming others. Leaders do the work. So I don't know about you. I'm ready to turn the page on these guys. So go ahead. Say it with me. We're not going back. We've got something better to offer the American people. It starts with our candidate, Kamala Harris. From her first day as a prosecutor, as a district attorney, as an attorney general, as a United States senator, and then our vice president, she's fought on the side of the American people. She's taken on the predators and fraudsters. She's taken down the transnational gangs, and she stood up to powerful corporate interests. She has never hesitated to reach across that aisle if it meant improving your lives. And she's always done it with energy, with passion, and with joy. Folks, we've got a chance to make Kamala Harris the next president of the United States. But I think we owe it to the American people to tell them exactly what she'd do as president before we ask them for their votes. So here, this is the part, clip and save it and send it to your undecided relatives so they know. If you're a middle-class family or a family trying to get into the middle class, Kamala Harris is going to cut your taxes. If you're getting squeezed by prescription drug prices, Kamala Harris is going to take on Big Pharma. If you're hoping to buy a home, Kamala Harris is going to help make it more affordable. And no matter who you are, Kamala Harris is going to stand up and fight for your freedom to live the life that you want to lead. Because that's what we want for ourselves, and it's what we want for our neighbors. You know, you might not know it, but I haven't given a lot of big speeches like this. But I have given a lot of pep talks. So let me finish with this, team. It's the fourth quarter. We're down a field goal, but we're on offense and we've got the ball. We're driving down the field. And boy, do we have the right team. Kamala Harris is tough. Kamala Harris is experienced, and Kamala Harris is ready. Our job for everyone watching is to get in the trenches and do the blocking and tackling. One inch at a time, 1 yard at a time, one phone call at a time, one door knock at a time, one $5 donation at a time. Look, we got 76 days. That's nothing. There'll be time to sleep when you're dead. We're going to leave it on the field. That's how we'll keep moving forward. That's how we'll turn the page on Donald Trump. That's how we'll build a country where workers come first. Healthcare and housing are human rights. And the government stays the hell out of your bedroom. That's how we make America a place where no child is left hungry, where no community is left behind, where nobody gets told they don't belong. That's how we're gonna fight. And as the next president of the United States always says, when we fight, when we fight, when we fight, thank you. God bless.
Minnesota Governor Tim Walz on the third night of the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, formally accepting the nomination for vice president. Man, is he good?
He is very
good at that. Whether you agree with his policies or not, he is just good at it. You know, there's a lot of very good politicians who, you know, try to say the right thing. I actually believe this guy doesn't have to think about what he's saying because I think he actually believes it.
And that helps a lot. And it's also really important, I think, for the young men of America to see this example of healthy masculinity, not toxic masculinity.
Good luck to Kamala Harris following that on the closing night of the Democratic National Convention. All right, let's take a quick break. And to calm us down on the way out the door today, a quick break before Desi Joyen joins us with our latest Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to the Bradcast. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is supporting you and the things that you care about. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. Right now, as much as ever. If you choose to support us, you can do it really easily, safely, and quickly via bradblog.com/donate. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you. I think the fourth night of the DNC is the climate night, if I'm not mistaken. But before we get there, our latest Green News Report.
We deserve leaders who acknowledge the threats, heck, the existence of climate change.
Climate change and climate action woven into the Democratic National Convention. 99% of Americans have been affected by extreme weather just since May, plus...
From heat waves and hurricanes to fires and floods, this year the U.S. has already seen $19 billion disasters.
Buckle up, 2024 is second only to 2023 for billion-dollar weather disasters so far this year.
I'm buckled up. All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
And thank you for the beautiful weather, Chicago. It's been a little rough on Capitol Hill, where it's not just the heat, it's the stupidity.
Well done, Mr. Raskin. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, after years and years of screaming at your television whenever the national conventions were on, asking them to talk about climate change, looks like you finally got your wish.
Yes, at the lively and rollicking Democratic National Convention in Chicago this week, climate change and the environment have been woven into the fabric of the event. As we go to air, Vice President Kamala Harris is still slated to speak on Thursday night, but overall, the conventions of the two major political parties have highlighted the chasm of difference between them on climate change and environmental issues. Polls for years show the vast majority of voters want the federal government to act on climate change, increase the use of renewable energy, and decrease the burning of fossil fuels that cause climate change. But at the Republican National Convention last month, climate change was invisible as Republicans pledged to increase the burning of fossil fuels and repeal pollution regulations. And the GOP's Project 2025 explicitly calls to, quote, eradicate all mentions of climate change throughout the federal government the next time Republicans gain power.
Well, that'll solve it.
On the other hand, at the Democratic National Convention, President Biden focused on the historic climate successes of his administration and congressional Democrats, achieved despite entrenched opposition from Republicans and the powerful fossil fuel industry. He made the economic case for climate action and how Democrats' policies have generated a renewable energy jobs boom.
Right now, we're giving America an infrastructure decade, not week. We're modernizing our roads, our bridges, our ports, our airports, our trains, our buses, removing every lead pipe from schools and homes so every child can drink clean water. We passed the most significant climate law in the history of mankind. Cutting carbon emissions in half by 2030. Launching a climate corps, creating tens of thousands of jobs for young people of the future, who are going to make sure this continues. creating hundreds of thousands of jobs and clean energy for American workers.
And at the DNC, climate and environmental action have been part of nearly every speech.
Protecting the planet from climate change.
Letting polluters destroy our planet is radical.
She will expand investments in clean energy so that my generation will have clean air and good jobs.
The earth is not red or blue. The earth is sick and we must protect it. We deserve leaders who acknowledge the threats, heck, the existence of climate change.
We can heal a planet in peril. We can heal the land.
Of course, the stakes and the costs have never been higher. As man-made climate change fuels a stark increase in extreme weather, NOAA announced that as of the end of July, the U.S. has already endured 19 separate billion-dollar weather and climate disasters, from heat waves and hurricanes to fires and floods. Between 2019 and 2023, extreme weather disasters cost the U.S. more than $600 billion. The Union of Concerned Scientists has found that just since May, 99% of the country's population has been affected by extreme weather alerts. Many of those alerts have overlapped, meaning millions of people have faced multiple hazards at once. And finally, a new analysis from Yale Climate Connections this week projects that intensifying extreme weather events, coupled with the growing insurance crisis, are likely to cause significant economic and political disruption in the U.S. over the next 15 years.
You just had to throw that in, didn't you?
Yep.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter at Green News Report. The GNR will be off next week until after the Labor Day holiday. We hope you have a safe, a peaceful, and a cool one. Until then, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
What a way to save our souls this endless summer.
Endless indeed. Thank you very much, Desi Doyen. As
yes.
You heard the man say, not only the GNR, but the broadcast will be off next week until after the Labor Day holiday. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show, download it for free anytime at bradblog.com. That made possible by those of you who stopped by bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves and even put a little bit of gas into our Prius tank. You can drop me an email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks, Mastodons, and site still known as Twitter, I am The Brad Blog. We will see you there until we see you here next time. I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
See you.